unkempt and bedraggled, they shuffle into the neighborhood as if they had spent a night in the woods, which, of course, is exactly where they have spent the night. They look at us with hunger in their eyes, and that look demands, feed me, feed me. And so we ask, should we feed the hungry bears?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 641st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Elfin Cove who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. And with us on the boards, we have the Food Chain's very own Miss Idaho, Nikki James.
Hello.
And Carol and Parmalee are out today, so it's Nikki and I, and away we go. Well, folks, Karen Noyes fed the wild bears at her rural Yakutsk, Oregon home. And when she fed the bears, more bears came to be fed. Soon, Karen Noyes had a yard full of bears to be fed, with more coming all the time. Now, of course, it didn't take long before things got out of Karen Noyes' hands. One of her bear friends stormed a neighbor's barn and killed 60 turkeys. Another of her bear friends took a liking to the neighbor lady and got stuck trying to sneak in through the lady's dog door. And so on. Consequent to all the bearishness going around in the neighborhood, poor Karen Noyes was arrested and convicted for, get this, harassing wildlife, and sentenced to 3 years of probation, which included an order not to go near her rural home for 3 years. In sentencing Ms. Noyes, Lincoln County Circuit Judge Thomas Branford said, and I quote, "I commend you for loving the animals, but it is not enough to love. You have to love the right way, and you haven't. Bears are not pets to do with as you please." Now, Yellowstone Park has a long and storied history of wild bears and civilized people. When civilized people see the wild bears' pleading looks of, feed me, feed me, they often do. But when the wild bears are fed by civilized people, the bears undergo a personality change, and the pleading looks become demanding looks, feed me, feed me. And so today we pause to ask, should we feed the hungry bears? Here to help us hunt for an answer, we have the bear man himself, Kevin Sanders from Yellowstone Outdoor Adventures up in Gallatin Gateway, Montana. Kevin, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Good to have you aboard. Gallatin Gateway, Montana. Gateway, of course, to Yellowstone National Park.
Yeah, that's right.
The bear man. You were telling me a little bit about how you got to be known as a bear man, and it's such a good story. We have to share it with the audience.
Sure. Back when I was going to school in the early 1980s, I used to go around to elementary schools and give talks to school kids about bears in Yellowstone Park. And a day or so after I'd given a talk, I was in a grocery store, and I overhear on the next aisle over a little boy say, "Mom, that was the bear man." And she goes, "No, that was Mr. Sanders." And he goes, "No, that was the bear man." And being such a small community, it just kind of stuck, and she passed it around to everybody, and everybody started calling me the bear man, and it just kind of stuck.
So now, to find Kevin Sanders, all you have to do is Google the bear man of Yellowstone, and there you are.
Yeah, just Google Yellowstone bear man, or you can Google bears and Yellowstone Park, and I'll pop right up.
Okay, good. So let me ask you this, as the bear man of Yellowstone Park, have you ever run across a Karen Noyes?
Around in this particular area, yes. That happens, unfortunately, quite often. That is a very typical scenario where someone feeds a bear or two, they find it very cute, or they mm-hmm. just moved here and they've got a relative showing up and they want to show just how wild of an area they live in, so they begin feeding bears. And sometimes it happens quite innocently with bird feeders and other types of food items, but it also happens where folks actually want to feed bears to bring them in. And then what generally happens is they don't have the problem. It's the neighbors that have the problem.
Right, right. Because you're feeding the bears like you, but
right.
It's the neighbors that they're having a problem with because the neighbors aren't feeding them, right?
That's exactly right. So the bears start breaking into outbuildings, houses, and start looking for other food items, especially once it gets to the point where it's out of, where you feel it's out of control and you can no longer feed the bears that are coming in to eat, and then so the bears then all of a sudden they've lost the food source that they're relying on, and then they go looking at your neighbors.
Right, and then that's where the trouble starts. And I was
right.
kind of amused by one of Karen Noy's bears became infatuated with a neighbor lady and pursued her everywhere. Evidently, her husband had to drive her from her house to the barn.
Yeah.
And the bear eventually got stuck trying to get in the house through the lady's dog door. And I just, yeah. the image of that, you know, just, oh, my goodness, a little too familiar. Let me ask you this. Don't we all have a little Karen Noy's in us?
I think we do. You know, especially when you live out in a wilderness area, you know, we all want to see wildlife, and that's one of the reasons why people want to feed birds. You know, you want to draw them in close to us so we can view them. And so, yeah, I believe most people do, yeah.
And just, you know, that you see them, and they have that look in their eyes, you know, feed me, feed
right.
me, and so we do.
Unfortunately, fortunately for the, as it turned out, the neighbor lady that that bear had an infatuation for, that bear was probably looking at her as the food source.
Well, that was what she was thinking about. You know, that's what a lot of the problems. And of course, you know, Karen did not have that problem because, you know, the bears would go to her house and,
right.
and there would be food there for her, but the rest of the neighborhood really suffered greatly from it.
Yeah, and for whatever reason, that particular lady must have shown some sort of vulnerability, and that bear has picked up on that, so he was testing her.
Oh, what do you mean?
He was looking at her as the food item.
Mm-hmm. So if you show vulnerability... that's what they recognize, right?
Yes, exactly. These animals are looking for a vulnerable, you know, food item. And mm-hmm. black bears in particular are hunters, whereas grizzly bears, on the other hand, are more scavengers. They're more opportunistic, whereas black bears are more, they hunt. And so...
I want to get into that just a little bit down the line here. But first I'd like to go to the bears of Yellowstone Park.
Sure.
Because... of course, there's a long storied history of civilized people and wild bears there. And as a child of the Big Sky Country growing up in Montana, our parents would always take us, you know, as children to Yellowstone Park. And we'd stay in the quaint little cabins, you know, at the lake or at Old Faithful or at Fishing Bridge or someplace.
Right.
And the great sport among us kids was when a bear would wander into the cabin area looking for food.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you know, the bear would inevitably be chased around by a whole flock of kids who were yelling and screaming and whatnot, kind of like blackbirds on an eagle or something,
right.
or how they harassed them. But so that kind of behavior went on for a long time, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And it started out, you know, back in the 1800s. So it did. It had a long lifespan. It finally, the Park Service finally put it into it. Around between 1968 and 1972, they had a program, and basically it was initiated by the Natural Regulation Policy of 1968, voted in by Congress, which forced the Park Service into managing their parks more naturally.
Oh.
And so that basically forced the Park Service into eliminating the garbage dumps and, you know, educating people not to feed bears alongside the roads. And unfortunately, the Park Service did have to eliminate quite a few bears.
I have this wonderful black and white photograph in my studio at home. It's of a picture of this magnificent grizz. at the West Yellowstone dump.
Right.
And this Grizz, it's a, you know, a tight shot on the Grizz. He fills up the whole frame, and it's just, he's on the move. And boy, he's on the move. He's headed for something. You know, you could
yeah.
just, he's like a locomotive. There's
right.
nothing going to stop this guy.
Right.
And so we essentially, the Congress forced the Natural Park Service to say, okay, you're going to have to come to grips with this situation. You're going to have to figure out a natural way of managing the forests and the bears and the wild
right.
animals. And so when we get back from this break, we'll take a look at how we did things naturally. Folks, this is The Food Chain. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. We have with us the Bear Man, Kevin Sanders from Yellowstone Outdoor Adventures. And boy, if you've never had the opportunity to take a outdoor adventure in Yellowstone Park, it is a treat that you will never, ever forget. I guarantee that. And having had a few myself, I never forget them. So the question of the day is, should we feed the wild and hungry bears? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Would you, if you could, feed the wild bears that walk into your backyard looking for food? I'm hungry, feed me, they say. And yet, those in the know say that a fed bear is a dead bear. And so we ask today, should we feed the hungry bears? With us today, we have the Bear Man, Kevin Sanders from Yellowstone Outdoor Adventures, here to talk about feeding the bears and what happens when civilized people feed wild bears. And it's an interesting situation. In the early, I guess right before 1970, the park services throughout the country didn't do much to manage bears at all, did they, Kevin?
And prior to 1968, no, they did not. In fact, just about every national park, and Yellowstone in particular, had backcountry garbage dumps.
Mm-hmm.
Even had bleachers set up around those garbage dumps where you could come and watch grizzly bears feed on garbage, and they allowed people to feed black bears alongside the roads, and yeah.
I remember them days. Oh, yes, I do. And but what happened?
Well,
when civilized people fed the hungry bears that way?
Well, it resulted in, at least in Yellowstone Park, it resulted in up to, on average, 68 bear-caused human injuries or deaths every year. So bears would often crawl in people's vehicles after food because people would tease them and, you know, put the food in front of them and then draw it back. And there's photographs of bears actually crawling inside vehicles. And there's even been stories, although I've never seen any actual photographs, but there are stories of visitors painting or smearing jelly on their children's faces to allow the black bears to lick it off so they could get a photograph. And of course, the bear would sometimes want to take a bite. And so on average...
What's eating what, right?
Yeah.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about bears in nature. And of course, Yellowstone Park is probably as close as we can get to observing what bears eat in nature. And you have a wonderful explanation of the bears' natural foods on your website, which I really enjoyed reading. There's two kinds of bears in Yellowstone, correct?
Right. There we have black bears, which are the only bear that is native to North America,
mm-hmm.
Ursus americanus. And then we have the grizzly bear, which is actually the Russian brown bear.
Mm-hmm.
It migrated in over the Bering Land Bridge, it is believed, during the last ice age.
Ursus Horribilis.
Yes.
Why do they call it Horribilis?
Oh, the horrible bear. That started back with the Lewis and Clark expedition. So, mm-hmm. The horrible bear.
So there are two different kinds of bears, and physically they're built different, right?
Right. The grizzly bear has a very large muscle mass on its front shoulders. Sometimes that muscle mass is not as easily seen on some bears as it is on others. Some bears are Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. Some are not. It's just a muscle mass on their above their front shoulders that is very prominent on most of the grizzly bears. But again, some are, it's not as noticeable on where the black bear does not have that muscle mass.
Right. It gives them this magnificent look of a freight train roaring down the tracks. It's just, oh, my goodness. So they eat differently. They built differently. They're designed to live in nature differently,
in
right?
In different types of habitats,
right.
Correct. Grizzly bears prefer wide open grassland, sagebrush meadows. In fact, if we allowed them today, they would be out in places like Nebraska and Kansas. That's where Lewis and Clark ran across all their grizzly bears.
Right, right. It was on the Missouri.
Right, exactly. Where the black bear, it prefers timbered area. It can climb trees very easily. It has short, curved claws. Grizzly bears can climb trees. We've recorded grizzly bears climbing at least 30 feet in trees. So if you do have to climb a tree with a group, you know, a
40 feet at least, right?
No, at least 31 feet.
Good.
But typically the grizzly bears are not able to climb trees as easily because they have long claws.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that we have noticed here in Yellowstone is that they'll actually climb the trees using the branches as like a ladder.
Right, right. So they kind of pull themselves up.
Right.
So bears are omnivores. Both are.
Right. Both bears are omnivores. They eat a wide variety of foods from grasses to meat and anything in between.
And so they have being omnivores, they kind of have learned and have adapted to the seasons of food. True localvores, I guess you might call them, right?
Right. Yeah, and each year is going to be different, too. And we have some years that are considered bad bear food years. And other years are really good bear food years. So each year will be different, and every season is different.
Let's take it quickly through spring and so people can get an understanding of what bears eat.
Yeah, sure.
Early in the spring after hibernation, they crawl out of their hibernation caves and look around, and what's for dinner?
Right, and not all the bears come out at once. I usually see the first bear sometime around March the 15th. Those are usually the larger adult males and less conditioned bears that went into hibernation with less body fat than they should have. And the first thing they look for is literally anything they can find because there is nothing March 15th.
Right.
There's nothing to eat really for a bear except winter carrion or
winter.
Dead animals.
Yeah,
animals
winter that, kill then.
Yeah, animals that didn't make it through the winter. Or in Yellowstone Park, we've got wolves, and so there are some, they scavenge wolf kills as well.
Ah. Real quickly, how has the introduction of wolves impacted the bear population in Yellowstone?
Well, you know, that's kind of a mixed bag. It's both positive and negative. Positive in that it has allowed some bears, especially the bears that exit dens earlier in the spring, late winter, more of a food supply than they would have had if the wolves were not there. Hmm. On the downside, some wolves have preyed on grizzly bear cubs.
Uh-huh.
That has happened in black bear cubs as well, we're sure. But what I have noticed is that the northern range of the park is the best wolf habitat in the park, and where we've got the majority of wolves in Yellowstone Park prior to the wolf reintroduction, that used to be some of the best bear viewing area.
Right, right, Lamar River Valley.
Yeah, and it still is in a real early spring, but because the wolves have brought in more people, more visitors, the word has gotten out. The word gets out in the springtime. This is where you need to go to see wolves. They've got a wolf pack up there. That has increased the car traffic and human traffic, and that has pushed a lot of the bears away.
So grizzly bears and black bears have different reactions to people, don't they?
Right. Black bears are more tolerant of humans, whereas grizzly bears, they prefer to stay away. They'd rather not be around people in cars. And what I found during research in Yellowstone Park early in the 80s is that the average adult grizzly bear will avoid an active road up to 2.5 miles.
Wow. So they just don't even come close.
No, not the adult bears. Now, within that 2.5-mile area, that's where you're going to find, it's kind of a safety zone for young bears, three-year-old subadults that just got kicked loose from mom, who don't know how to, they don't know their place within the bear community yet. They don't know, they're used to having mom protect them, so they'll stay close up to the road, and any injured bear. A few years ago, we had a grizzly bear hit on the road and broke his back leg, and he hung out next to the road then the rest of the summer. Huh. Kind of a safety zone for them.
So throughout the year, bears eat whatever they can eat, which is mostly vegetation.
In Yellowstone Park, it's primarily 98% of a grizzly bear's diet is vegetation.
And they're not ungulates. They don't have multiple stomachs. So how do they compensate for their lack of efficiency of an ungulate in eating grasses?
Right. It is a very inefficient diet. It is a very inefficient system. They have an elongated digestive tract, which enables them to digest grasses, and they can gain weight from eating grass, but they have to eat that grass when it's very new, young, and lush. It has to, they can't go out and eat like a bale of hay.
Right.
It would do nothing for them. They have to eat this grass when it's very new, young, and lush.
And full of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids.
Yeah, right? Due to that elongated digestive tract, they can gain weight from that. But, again, it is a very inefficient system.
Okay, when we get back, what happens when wild bears are fed their first human food? What happens then? 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain. I am Michael Olson. Pick up your phone and join us. Any bear question you might have, or feeding the hungry bears. What do you think? Right back. Do stay tuned. Yellowstone Park, you remember Yogi Bear, right, has a long and storied history of wild bears meeting civilized people. When those civilized people see the wild bears pleading looks of feed me, they often do. But when the wild bears are fed by civilized people, the bears undergo a personality change, and the pleading looks become demanding looks. Feed me, feed me. And so today we ask, should we feed the hungry bears? Here to help us hunt for an answer, we have the bear man himself, Kevin Sanders, from Yellowstone Outdoor Adventures. And I've had a lot of opportunities for Yellowstone Outdoor Adventures, and I think I've enjoyed every single one of them. And I especially enjoyed the times I got to go cross-country skiing down through the Lamar Valley in the winter. Oh, my God. Heaven on earth. So, Kevin, let me ask you this. The bears live on a diet of whatever's fresh. You're talking about eating in season.
Right.
That's what they have to do because that's where the nutrients are. They are incapable of eating stored grains or stored hays, I guess, stored grasses. So they have to go for the fresh and the seasonal, which sometimes means elk calves and fish, and sometimes it means, most of the time, 98% of the time, it means grasses and whatnot. So what happens when a bear is fed people food? What is it about people food that drives them bonkers the way it does?
The availability, and it's not so much people food, but especially around in this area, and it's becoming more of a problem elsewhere, as I'm finding out through various fish and game agencies, and that is bird feeders.
Uh-huh.
So seeds, nuts. In the late fall, they do go after, the squirrels go up into trees, and they harvest the nuts, and they bury those nuts down in the ground called middens or cache, or a squirrel cache.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll store those nuts down in the ground, and the bears come and find those. Well, people put bird feeders out. They want to see birds. They enjoy having birds around their homes. And so that's actually becoming probably the number one cause of problem, bear-human conflict, is bird feeders. That's what attracts the bears in most commonly.
I think that's what attracted the bears to Karen Noy's place.
You know, sounded like it, yeah.
Yeah, she had bird feeders out, and then all of a sudden there's a little bear in the backyard. And,
yeah.
There's an account of an Alaska named Charlie Noyes who does the same thing, essentially, that Karen Noyes does, only on an industrial scale, because he's up in Alaska and working with the big browns.
Uh-huh.
And he was the subject of an Animal Planet documentary, but the piece on it goes something like this. You know, Charlie used to be a bear hunter, but one time a black bear appeared in his backyard and crawled up to him on his belly. And according to the Animal Planet website, Vanderkroop reciprocated, and the encounter started a long-lasting love affair. But the wildlife experts said that there is a psychological component to Vanderkroop's behavior with the bears. They are associating Charlie only because of the food. That association is fulfilling some kind of psychological need for Charlie. And so thus this need that I think is involved in all of us to one extent or another to feed those that are hungry. And but I was thinking about what happens when bears, because it seems like when you feed them human food, they really go through a personality change. Something happens in them, and the pleading looks become demanding looks. And I think I was wondering if it can't be attributed to the nutrient density or the calorie density of human foods.
That could play a part, but no, I think it's just it's an availability issue.
Mm-hmm.
The bear becomes used to you putting food out, and then if you start to withdraw that food, then the bear says, I want that food, and I'm demanding that food now.
Before I was asking for it, now I'm demanding it.
Yes.
And that's the personality change that is quite frightening.
Yeah.
Especially to Karen Noy's neighbors, you know, when they have the bear trying to crawl through the doggy door to get to eat you, you know. I mean, it gets kind of frightening. It's a different kind of asking, I guess.
Yeah.
And so
for the most part, they'll avoid our food smells. Barbecue grills are probably the second type of food or smell item that bears will be attracted to.
And some works bears, on me.
Yeah, and some bears, some bears just they'll walk by a filled bird feeder and go right for the garbage or the barbecue grill. They'll go right for it. That's all they key in on. And then there will be the next bear that might walk by. It'll completely avoid the barbecue grill and go right for the bird feeder or the garbage can.
Huh.
Whatever that bear has had contact with in the past, that's the food item it will go after. That's what it smells, and that's what it will search for.
So when the National Park Service can't try to come to grips with this whole situation about bears running amok, they instituted a bear management program which had at its core the simple statement, don't feed the bears.
Right. Yeah, in its simplest terms, yes, don't feed the bears. Put the bears back on a natural, food program, I guess is what you could call it. And there did draw some controversy. There was a twin brothers, John and Frank Craighead,
right,
who had been studying the bears in Yellowstone since 1959. And so by 1968, 1970, they'd gained a lot of information about bears. And there was a bit of a controversy and a little bit of mudslinging, in fact, during that summer of 1970 and mm-hmm. on into 71. In fact, there was a particular biologist within the Park Service who disagreed with the Craigheads, and he felt that there were two different communities of bears, that there was a garbage habituated bear, that's all anybody ever saw, and that there was a wild bear in the backcountry that fed nothing but on wild foods, and that if we removed the garbage dumps and eliminated garbage bears, killed them, that we would be left with wild bears in the backcountry. You clean this up overnight. Well, as the Craigheads disagreed, and they ended up actually being pushed out of the park, And their research had ended at that point, and they were no longer allowed to conduct research within the park at that point. And the Park Service did go out. They followed Ranger Glenn Cole's recommendation to go out, and they started bulldozing dumps over. They started educating people not to feed bears, and they started chasing bears away from the road initially, but they did eliminate quite a few bears. And as it turns out, the Craigheads were completely right. Every bear in Yellowstone at that time relied on garbage or handouts in some form or fashion.
And so when we get back, what happens to the personality of a bear? What happened to the bears when their human food was removed? Hey, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. It is a beautiful opportunity to take a walk through Yellowstone Park. And when we get back, I'm going to the bear man, Kevin Sanders, to take us on a tour of the backcountry in Yellowstone and see if we can find some bears right back. Well, folks, put on your hiking boots and grab your hiking stick, and let's grab a bunch of food, about tri-tip steak and some strawberries and some ice cream and some potato chips, and we'll throw them into the a backpack, and we'll head off into the backcountry on a outdoor adventure in Yellowstone Park with a bear man himself, Kevin Sanders. Oh, we're going to have a lot of fun, aren't we, Kevin?
Yeah, you might want to toss in a rain poncho this year, too.
It's been wet up there this year.
Yes, it has, but it's wonderful, and it should keep the fires at bay. We probably should have a nice wet summer. It's made everything lush and green, and, yep, beautiful.
It looks like Oregon and Montana for some. That's the way the jet stream goes this year.
Yeah.
So let's take us into the backcountry of Yellowstone.
Sure.
And let's go hunting for bears. Let's go find some grizzly bears. And by the way, what do I do with that marinating steak in my backpack?
Well, you'd probably want to leave that back at the trailhead and keep that in your car. You can bring, we do bring sandwiches and
Wait
stuff.
A minute, I understand that bears now are breaking into cars, too, and breaking into trunks, and nothing is safe anywhere.
That's primarily in Yosemite.
Yosemite?
Yeah.
California bears.
Right. Those are black bears in Yosemite. They have always had a problem with black bears breaking into vehicles. We have not had a bear break into a vehicle in Yellowstone Park. So
what's the difference between Yosemite black bears and...
The bears in Yosemite learned that that's where the food was. And because people stored food in their vehicles, it's warmer there. They might have their windows cracked open. They could smell the food. So the bears would break into those vehicles.
Do they have school for bears on how to get food from people?
No, they just pull and bite and anything they can do to get inside a vehicle. They break the windows. I've seen them actually pull the door, actually curl the door downwards. If they can get their claws into that little crack, they can actually pull that door right down off its frame.
They're pretty smart animals, too.
They're very smart and very tenacious. They'll continue. If they know that there's a reward at the end of this process, they will continue on until they get that reward.
What about food? So, what about putting my steak in a food canister and taking it into the backcountry with us?
Yeah, you can do that. And if you were going out camping and you brought food and you brought a steak, that's not a problem. You're going to cook it there on the campfire. You're not going to be You have to camp in Yellowstone Park. You have to camp in a designated campsite, even in the backcountry. And so those are heavily regulated and watched. And we have the Park Service has actual fire pits already set up with food poles up in the air above in between a couple of trees that you're supposed to store your food in. And then you camp actually away from that site. You can actually put your tent anywhere you want. There's not a designated spot for a tent. It needs to be at least 100 yards away, though.
Not even close.
And yeah.
Engineer Nikki James was telling me before the show how she used to go hiking up in Idaho, and you'd have to put your food, hang it from a tree really high and out on a limb.
Right. It's actually recommended that you string a line between two trees And I always bring carabiners. It makes the job a lot easier. You can bring a line between two trees, and then if you've got a carabiner tied in the middle of that rope, then you can just hoist your food bag or your backpack up to that carabiner in the middle there so it's hanging. But most people don't do that. I've noticed the majority of people that go out hiking and backpacking, they just throw a line over the limb of a tree and hoist it up in the tree. And, you know, almost no one ever has any problems. Once in a while, someone will, but, you know, black bears can climb trees, so they could go right up that tree if that's all you used.
And yeah, and, you know, in Yosemite, they talk about how the bears will climb up a tree and then dive at the food bag.
Right,
do a kamikaze.
Yeah.
It's those California bears. Let's go to Daryl, who has a interesting comment about bears. Daryl?
Yes, hi, neighbor. Yeah, my consideration, I grew up when I was little, we ate bears, and hunting kept the bear population down and provided a food source as well. And you use terms like eliminate. Well, the real term is, of course, kill them. Why don't we kill them and allow hunting again so that we can thin the bear population and keep it under manageable proportions? And, of course, I'm not talking about hunting bears in parks, but just in general, bear hunting.
Yeah, actually, we do have hunting. And there's black bear hunting throughout North America. That has never ended here in the state of Montana. And that also includes Idaho and I believe Wyoming as well. They have both a spring and fall black bear hunting season.
Well, I was, of course, referring more to California.
Right. I'm not familiar with California laws. They may or may not have a black bear season. My guess is they probably do.
I think they do.
You're just, the problem is you're going to draw bears by having food items out like bird feeders and barbecues and garbage. A number of bears on the peripheral edge of cities then will be drawn into the city itself by those food smells. And, of course, there's no hunting there.
Daryl, I once had the opportunity to have bear steaks for breakfast when I was up cross-country skiing in Yellowstone, right outside, and we had bear steaks, and we had French toast with rendered bear lard, and I said, where on earth did you get the bear? And my host said, well, he came knocking at the door one night, and that's how I got the bear. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson. We will be right back after these very important messages. What do you think? Should we feed the bears? Right back. Well, folks, we're out in the backwoods of Yellowstone Park with Kevin Sanders, the bear man of Yellowstone. Kevin's got a wonderful website, and you can always find him so easily just by Googling the bear man of Yellowstone. And he's with Yellowstone Outdoor Adventures, which is what we're doing today with bears. Let's go to Kathy. Kathy, welcome to The Food Chain.
Yes, good morning, Michael. I just wanted to relate a story. We have a second home in South Lake Tahoe in an area up there called Christmas Valley, so it's kind of out beyond the city limits. And of the last 5 years, our home has been broken into by bears 4 times.
Ooh.
And they go directly to the kitchen.
Yeah.
They realize that there's a complimentary box like they find in the back of the cars. Only it's bigger and has more goodies in it.
Yes.
And they totally ravage whatever in your refrigerator. We keep a few stock supplies, sodas, things like this. We did find out that they like regular Coke better than Diet Coke because we had both kinds and they didn't bother with the diet. They just...
That's interesting.
The regular
content, yeah.
They realized the different color cans indicated different flavor, evidently.
Oh, and that's interesting.
They like the red cans, not the silver cans.
Wow.
But my husband's a beekeeper, and we also had honey, and we had a very...
Well, good. Kathy.
Yes. Yes.
Are you feeding the bears?
Not intentionally.
Yeah.
Our living quarters in this home are basically on the second story. There's a kind of an incline in the lot, and the back elevation is at the living quarters. But in the front, there's a garage and things underneath. And they have presence of mind to walk up on the deck, and the first time they broke a window and came in through the window, and the remaining times they have actually pushed in the door, totally pushed it off, broken the hinges out of the molding and everything, and pushed in the doors to get in there.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think the bears will ever stop breaking into your cabin as long as you have this great smorgasbord of people food?
Oh, we have cut down considerably what we keep in there. But it's not only our place. We are in a mixed neighborhood where there are full-time residents and then there's
right.
part-time residents, and they only hit the homes that are part-time residents.
Kevin, yes,
because the full-time residents are actually feeding the bears outside.
Yeah,
sometimes,
right.
Yes. But up at Tahoe, they have a very active campaign with a group called the Bear League that puts posters up that says a fed bear is a dead bear and those kind of things. And but the part of the problem is there is such a high density of bears in the area.
Yeah.
And people... part-time people who come up for a weekend put out their garbage in unsecured containers.
Yeah.
The city and county both have regulations about bear-proof containers, but they're very expensive for most people.
Wow.
And so they...
Well, we have just a minute left, Kathy, but I want to ask Kevin. Kevin, how should we treat the bears, civilized people treat the wild animals?
Well, you know, we want to treat them as wild animals, which is what they are. They're not pets. And, you know, she is in that's a tough situation. And
yeah.
I actually live in a situation that was much like that initially. And it took me quite a few years to educate my neighbors. And
feed
the word out. Yeah, especially the garbage and whatnot.
Right.
That took a few years, but I finally brought everybody around, and now we rarely have a problem. I still see bears.
It's the Bear Man of Yellowstone, Kevin Sanders. Just Google Bear Man of Yellowstone, and you'll get him. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. And
yeah,
folks,
it was my pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in. Remember, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.